Welcome into a Thursday morning edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Shaw, going solo after a 109-104 Philadelphia 76ers victory over the New York Knicks. But the score doesn't matter. The fact that the planet's on fire doesn't matter. This country falling apart doesn't matter. All that matters is that Frank Ntilikina was a straight-up beast. We get into that and more next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knicks is all rebound, back up, off the glass, it's good! RJ Barrett brings the Knicks to the
room. What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane, Knox foul from behind.
Becomes infectious. You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. I am your host, Gavin Shaw, going solo because my co-host, Alex Wolf, is presumably asleep because it is 3:48 in the morning. I don't know why I decided to record at this time. I think maybe I might have been a little bit too hyped after this game and just ready to run through a wall, and I had to kind of contain myself, meditate for a couple of hours, calm back down, find a sense of serenity, and now I can talk about it in an objective manner. So the Knicks, as they did a week ago or a couple of days ago against the Hornets, got up pretty big in this game, a 17-point lead halfway through the third quarter, and they proceeded to blow it, allowing the Sixers to outscore them by 22 points. From that point forward, on their way to a 109-104 victory. And it was a game of highs, and I guess you could call it lows near the end for the Knicks, but I thought for the most part this was probably their best played game of the season, though I guess I didn't watch the two Dallas games. So those aside, this is certainly their best played loss of the entire season against a Philly team that struggled a bit, clearly lacks for shooting, and has their flaws, but is ultimately, I mean, I think when it comes down to it, going to be one of the five or so greatest contenders for the NBA Finals. The Knicks sort of matched them punch for punch, and then it was sort of obvious down the stretch. The Knicks did not really have an option to score on Philly's defense when they were totally locked in, and if your number one guy in those situations is Marcus Morris, you're ultimately going to lose the game. But that doesn't really matter to me because we already knew that coming in. And again, when the Knicks gave up this lead, look, like Philly was going to get hot. They were so, so cold to start the third quarter. The Knicks were making all these great plays. It ultimately wasn't sustainable. And Philly went on this 14-2 run. Ben Simmons had a ridiculous dunk. Mike Scott basically murdered the Knicks. He started stroking threes, went 4-for-6 from distance, had a big one near the end of the third, and then essentially won the game when he hit another one with 70 seconds to go, and that just about did it. But again, sort of going back to the big picture takeaway on all of this, it was ultimately that the Knicks, for four games now, have reached a new level, and that comes after the nadir that was the Cleveland loss and the horrific post-game press conference, and I think me very legitimately wondering whether or not that was it for David Fizdale. And since then, they've played exceptionally hard, if nothing else, in every game. And that's ultimately, like, if I'm being asked what my expectations are for this team and what constitutes a good game, a good season, it's that they play with this type of effort. And that was sort of my holdout for this team, going back to my reason to hold out hope for this team, I should say, going back to the preseason, because I made it very clear, even less so than Alex, I really disliked this roster. I thought it was poorly constructed. I didn't think it was built in a way to be all that cohesive. And knowing that, I thought, well, the upshot is hopefully they eventually trade off some of these guys and turn them into assets, which I preseason I thought that guy would be Marcus Morris. Now I want it to be Julius Randle. And I think Wayne Ellington and Reggie Bullock, when he comes back, if he shows he can be healthy, still prime candidates to go to a team like Philly, because if tonight wasn't obvious, they desperately need some floor spacers. and then from there play the young guys a little bit. But even more so than that, I mean, my hope was, while they still had this iteration of the team together, was that they would play extremely hard. And when Marcus Morris started referencing 90s basketball, I mean, this is sort of what I had in mind. And tonight they actually brought that attitude. They actually played with that sort of passion and pace. Like, even Julius Randle had that awesome hustle play down the stretch where I can't exactly remember what the sequence was that led to it, but essentially I think it was Frank missing a three, and it might have ended up being it wasn't an inbound. It was a rebound off that Frank missed three. And then they tried this quick little bounce pass to Simmons, and Randle anticipated it, charged in, came out of nowhere, and drew a foul. And those are the types of plays that have just been pretty consistently lacking from this squad. And here's the thing. Despite that effort, the ceiling of this team is very much capped. One, because of what I mentioned a little bit earlier, where if Marcus Morris is going to be your closer, you're not going to win games against good teams, because the other team has Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and Tobias Harris and Mike effing Scott, apparently. And then even past that, I didn't think the collective scoring and shooting for this team is very sustainable. And that's why, I mean, even if they continue to play this hard, I don't know if I can actually guarantee it won't always result in them being in games against playoff teams, because they needed guys sort of playing over their heads. Like, look at Taj Gibson tonight. He was a monster. Complete BS that he didn't play more. In 14 minutes, 11 points, 4 rebounds, and he had probably the best sequence of the game, where he just toasted Embiid on a spin move that I had no idea he had in his repertoire, much less had in his repertoire in his mid-30s, and then comes back down and bangs a three the next play. And there were sequences of brilliance from Marcus Morris, who went 4-for-7 from three in this game and hit what felt like a lot of big shots. Frank, I don't want to spoil it, we're going to get to, but Bob Portis, who I would normally be more upset about the amount of time he played, though. I think you 100% should have flipped him and Gibson in terms of minutes. Portis finished with 24, Gibson with 14. Gibson in those 14 and plus 7 for the game. Portis in his 24 minutes, a team low minus 14. I don't think that's a coincidence. But even he had like some really nice drives and hit a big three in the first half. And Knox hit his only shot of the game. Dennis Smith was making shots he hasn't made all season. My point being that they played hard, but it was still largely in the context of this isolation-heavy style that, when you don't have elite players, is not going to ultimately amount to much. So the takeaway from this is the effort from the Knicks should be there every night. But until they change their roster construction, their ceiling is capped, regardless of how high that effort is, both by their talent and their style of play. But I am absolutely burying the lead, and that is Frank Ntilikina, who, I mean, I know last year I think he had games where he scored a couple more points. Given the context, given the opponent, that this was, for my money, the best defensive team in the NBA. I don't know if the numbers bear that out yet, but just in terms of the guys they have, this is as good as it's going to get. That Frank played balls to the wall. Like, I thought this game was very on par with the performance he had for Team France in their upset over Team USA this past summer at the World Cup. Finished with 17 points on 6 of 8 shooting, 2-for-4 from 3, 3-for-4 from the charity stripe. And more important than everything else, it was sort of the attitude that he came out with. He was aggressive from the get-go, and he still had to fight off some of his instincts. Like, he had that one play after hitting a pretty strong elbow jumper on his first attempt. He came back down, was basically wide open from 17 feet, passed up on the shot, moved the ball along. Clyde was complaining about it, got it back, pump fake, step back, three ball, cans it. And it was just like, all right, he's figuring it out. He, in the moment, realized, oh, I made a mistake. I shouldn't have passed that. I'm Frank Ntilikina. I was a top 10 pick in the draft. I beat Team USA basically by myself down the stretch. I deserve to take this step back three. And he did it, and he hit it, and it was awesome. And that led to like a whole bunch of other just awesome sequences from him during the game. Like, he forced his 10-foot fadeaway that, and here's where I have a double standard, because I would have killed a DSJ for the same shot, even if it went in, which maybe I'll do later this podcast, but he made it. And Here's the difference. Frank has earned that attempt because he is typically so unselfish, and it was so abnormal, and it came in the context of him being scalding hot. And even if he missed it, guess what? He would fight to earn it back defensively, which you can't really say about Dennis Smith. You can't say about Julius Randle, and you can only occasionally say about Marcus Morris. Another epic moment for Frank. He was about to go around a screen, rejected it, crossover, hit a triple, had a floater, and then maybe my favorite one, he clearly learned this from Dot, because Dot's been doing this a lot over the last couple of games, but shot clock winding down, gets to his spot just inside the elbow, a defender flying out at him thinking the clock's about to expire, a little up fake, lets the defender go by, and just smoothly, confidently, saying it with his chest, just drains an 11-foot jumper. And it was a thing of beauty, because he clearly was so in the mindset that this ball is going to go in. And that was, I'm podcasting with a smile right now. It was a great, great night for Frank Ntilikina. Everyone in the Frank Ntilikina hive could throw a party. I hope we see more of it, because I think it was two episodes ago I was saying, look, like, I mean, I love that he's playing well defensively, and anyone who reads the Knicks Film School newsletter that comes out daily, that I always recommend to everyone, you can see the stats that Frank far and away has been the most impactful Knick in terms of the difference when he's on the court versus when he's off the court. There was a great tweet from former Locked On Knicks host and current 2K magnate James Marcita. It reads as such. Frank Ntilikina is in the 83rd percentile in on-off for point guards at plus 11.5 points per 100 possessions. Essentially what that translates out to, the Knicks play like a 37-win team when he's on the court and a 13-win team when he's off. And that was before the best game of his season, which was tonight. So he was great regardless of if he was shooting well. And I hope I didn't get misperceived when I was sort of being a little critical of him and his shooting. But my core point in saying that was, we know he's good. We know he makes a positive impact. The difference is this sustainable, or does he make sense in the context of a really good team and playing a role on a really good team? And to me, I mean, I guess I'm just asking myself easy questions, because yeah, he belongs on any team in the NBA right now as a really good point guard defender. Like, maybe this is a little naive on my part. The Clippers might be the answer to this, but I really can't think of a team where he shouldn't be playing, and he shouldn't be playing some role for some amount of minutes. But if you want him to, again, on a team like the Clippers or the Celtics or any team you consider amongst the best in the NBA, if you want to put him in there and say, in what context would he be playing 30 minutes a game, it's if he played like he did tonight, where he's confident, he's seeking out shots, and he's making shots. He didn't have an assist in this game, and that's a little bit disappointing given the run he's been on, but I don't mind if that happens occasionally, if it's what it takes for him to get confident in his offensive game and shooting the basketball. All right, that was plenty on Frank. I hate going long on solo podcasts, so I'm just going to do kind of a rapid fire through the rest of my notes from this game. We already talked about Taj Gibson. I thought he was awesome. I had a really nice play, and like that I didn't note earlier. It was like the second or third possession of the game where Embiid blocked him. He got it back, ball faked, sent Embiid into the sky, went to the other side and scored. And I really think Gibson is one of their more valuable players. And I would love, I know Mitch is still hobbling a little bit with the ankle, but I would be absolutely thrilled if they just took Bobby Portis out of our lives and made the center rotation entirely Gibson and Mitch. I think the Knicks would very obviously be better. And the fact that they don't do that perennially makes me question David Fizdale's coaching. And I sort of get the logic. Like, the Knicks don't have a lot of offensive talent. They're the worst offense in the league. How can you justify excising the guy who's nominally their most talented offensive option at the center position? And my argument to David Fizdale would be, but that's not true, because he is way less efficient than both Gibson and Mitch. And I get that he provides some theoretical spacing that has not actually come into play, as he's not been a very good three-point shooter by and large this season. Another note, Ben Simmons, first career three-pointer. I don't really have much to say about that. Shout out to Ben Simmons. I'm a little insulted that the Knicks were the team that I came against, but give the guy some credit. Mitchell Robinson, pretty quiet night outside of some big moments down the stretch. Didn't play all that much, 13 minutes, had four fouls. That's becoming a real issue for him, and we haven't totally fixated on it in this podcast, but just frustrating because I really thought, I mean, last year we saw this dramatic change when DeAndre Jordan joined the team, and it seemed like he was kind of coaching Mitch up on the finer points of defense, and he was getting better and better and better at that, and it got to the point where I was like, okay, it's not going to be an issue this season, and it has been, and that sucks because he is still my favorite guy along with Frank on this team. And I want to see him out there more. But he did have some good moments. He blocked Embiid when Embiid just tried to speed by him on a drive. And I love when other teams are just forced to respect what Mitch can do. And there are those great moments every single game where someone tries to challenge him and Mitch just destroys him. And the fact that it was against Embiid, if their careers both go the way we think they're going to go, obviously Embiid is already there, but in terms of his health, that could be a long-time beautiful Atlantic Division rivalry, and I am a sucker for a good Atlantic Division rivalry. And then down the stretch, back-to-back, Marcus Morris to Mitch alley-oops, and that's honestly the most I've loved Marcus Morris this entire season. He had six assists in this game, which I never really thought we'd say from him, and I think he's realizing what he has to a degree to be sort of the fulcrum of an NBA offense, which is something he's never really come close to experiencing before. I would say the closest he got was maybe a third option at points on those young Phoenix teams he was on. He was kind of a fourth or fifth guy for the most part with the Celtics, but he's sort of learning on the job and in a lot of ways doing a much better job of handling it than Julius Randle, which is shocking because we thought it was going to be the exact opposite, but two great back-to-back plays, and right after that, in my notes, I have Morris giveth, Morris taketh. He forced up an early shot clock three, and then I believe he missed a layup, and that like essentially did it for the Knicks. And here's the thing: I almost don't want to be critical of that because one, the Knicks are asking him to play a role that he's simply not good enough to be in, as I noted a couple times earlier in this podcast. But on top of that, it's sort of with him and DSJ and to a slightly lesser degree Randle, it's kind of these guys' nature to shoot when they have the slightest opening. And I mean, for someone like me, it's frustrating to watch because I'm looking at it from a very logical perspective and saying either, oh, you don't shoot well in that spot or you're not good enough to be taking that shot or that's an inherently inefficient shot. But it's almost like what makes those guys good, and particularly Morris, because obviously DSJ is struggling right now, is the fact that they have the confidence to take those shots. And if they didn't have that confidence, well, they wouldn't be a very good scorer at all. They might not even be NBA players at all. So you almost have to take the good and the bad because the qualities that make the good with Morris also are what make the bad to a degree. And where you really get brilliant role players. Like I always think of Danny Green types. I mean, one, that guy works his ass off defensively, which give Morris credit, he does as well. But two, he really genuinely knows his own limitations, and knowing those limitations don't limit his effectiveness and don't limit his confidence to hit shots in big moments. And that's, I mean, it's an incredibly rare thing. It's why guys like Green are so ridiculously valuable. It's why you always see them on winning teams, teams that are winning championships. It's a really hard thing to find, a role player who is humble enough to know his own role while simultaneously being talented enough to excel in it. It's rare. And Marcus Morris is not that guy. Dennis Smith Jr. is not that guy. Julius Randle doesn't appear to be that guy. Let's talk about Randle a little bit. Coming off easily his best night as a Knick. Wasn't great in this one, 5 of 13, made up for it a little bit by going 2 for 4 from 3, Just 5 of 8 from the foul line, which when in a game you lose by 5 points, you got to make your free throws. All in all, 17 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, stat that really stands out, 3 steals. Look, he played his ass off in this game. He played really, really hard. And I've been critical of him quite often, but he worked. And that's sort of what I'm looking for, again, at this point. Because you can't, he is what he is. I don't think he's a great basketball player. I think he's totally miscast as a number one option. Frankly, I think even on a bad team, he's miscast as a number two option. I think he's a six man. And that's what we've learned. And to that point, like when he takes a bad shot, he had one in the first quarter early in the shot clock, contested mid-range jumper. If you're David Fizdale, just bench him. Just bench the guy. He only stays in the game at that point because of the number on his contract and the recency with which the Knicks signed him. And that's not how good teams do business. You react based on how a player is performing, and irregardless of anything else, you bench him if they take a crummy shot. And that's how you have accountability, and that's how you build a team of equals and one where everyone sort of knows the lay of the land. And I would encourage everyone, if you have a membership to The Athletic, it's actually, I think it's only like $3 a month. And John Hollinger, new Locked On podcast host, writes for them. So great combo there. Good little synergy. Good little advertisement. I don't think either is a word. Synergy. But there was this great article by Jason Jenks, their Spurs writer, on Greg Popovich and his brilliance in terms of how he's just as willing to yell at Tim Duncan as he is the 15th guy. And I wish that was a quality Fizdale had, but younger coaches don't always have that confidence, and they often have, I think, a misguided idea of what constitutes leadership and what you have to do to build a team. And you credit Pop for never really, I think, buying into the trope that a superstar is above the rest of the team. And that's not like a get-off-my-lawn take. That's not like an old-timey take. That's just, I mean, it's look at the track record. There's no team that's been as good for as long, and I think that is a big part of it. Obviously, you have to have the right superstars. What works for Tim Duncan might not work for Carmelo Anthony, but yeah, I think it's generally a good way to go. All right, let's see what else we got. RJ Barrett, another poor shooting night for him. I'm just waiting for him to get a little bit more consistent. I think all the minutes he's playing have led to him hitting the rookie wall a bit prematurely in this game, just 4 for 12, but did contribute in a lot of different areas, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals. And again, I mean, he every time he's in one, he shows off why I think he is such a great bet to, if nothing else, be a very good and very long-time NBA player. Because the guy just, as a 19-year-old, he knows exactly what he's doing on the court at all moments in a way that no one else on this Knicks roster does. And given the age of some of the other guys, that's spectacular. I mean, it's really only him and Gibson in that category. Like, he had this brilliant, intuitive double team on Joel Embiid, knowing exactly when to go over and then when to help back out his man in the first quarter that I think eventually led to a bad miss for Philly. My favorite, two great Barrett moments in this game. One, right before halftime, he went one-on-one with Ben Simmons, which if you're a fan of high school basketball, you would know that's a Montverde versus Montverde matchup, which is Montverde is a prep school in Florida, perennially the number one team in the country. Both of those guys went there. So it was a nice little moment to see them go against each other, and Barrett to get the better of it as he banked a shot in Simmons' face. And I'm just a big fan of whenever two young stars who are going to, I mean, maybe down the road be two of the faces of the league, go against each other. So very, very cool moment. And then he had this vicious transition one-handed putback when the Knicks were really rolling as part of that. I think it was ultimately a 15-0 run to open the third quarter. Yeah, it was a 15-0 run. That was great. He has to make his layups. He's been missing a lot of layups recently. And I think that's just tired legs, but maybe something he has to work on. Because, and it is a little bit concerning because it was an issue going back to Duke. but I think it's mostly all the minutes he's playing. Let's finish up with Dennis Smith Jr. Easily his best game of the season, 15 minutes, scored 13 points, 5 of 9 shooting, 2 for 3 from 3. He was great, and I hope, if nothing else, this gives him a lot more confidence. I mean, again, one of the better plays of the whole game, I thought, was Kevin Knox coming up with a steal. Football-style lob pass down the court, DSJ streaking ahead and laying it in. Just a good synergy between those two. Very, very fun to see it. Not a criticism, but I just do it for three or four games in a row, Dennis. That's all I'm asking for the guy. I know, obviously, very real, very heartbreaking, extenuating circumstances around the beginning of his season, and that definitely makes me want to give the guy the benefit of the doubt. But as I said throughout the preseason, and I mean, regardless of anything going on in his life, I don't think he's a great player. I've made that really clear, and I hope he makes me eat those words, because he seems like a great dude, and I want to root for him, because he's a lot of fun. But I don't think the shots he was making tonight were sustainable. Like, he hit one of those fadeaways from the free throw line that is like a shot he's been taking all season, and missing all season, and I just can't imagine it going in for more than one night in a row, or more than one out of every, like, six or seven games. 2 for 3 from three. He looked more confident from there. Again, let's hope that translates. Let's hope that continues. I just don't know if it will. All right, it's officially past 4 a.m. It's like 4:15 in the morning, and I got to wake up very early to call some football coaches. So I'm going to wrap up with a new segment debuting right here. Maybe I'll talk about it again next podcast with Alex too, because I want him to know about this. But I always find the funniest part of Bill Simmons' podcast, where he talks about his basketball career. So I want to just give updates on my pickup basketball career once a week. And the big one this week is, well, actually it started a week ago. I joined this JCC, a Jewish Community Center basketball league. And it was, I mean, week one was just spectacular, because I'm like 6'3", but just not a great athlete, like very, very average, like pretty good at basketball, but never stand out in any context. But amongst this particular group of people, I walked in and I was about, I'd say, like 5 inches taller than anyone else there, and like pretty much as skilled as anyone else. And it was life-affirming. It was just the biggest confidence boost I've ever gotten. It was the first time in 24 years on Earth I was the best athlete in any group larger than 5 people. It's basically like Rudy Gobert on defense, LeBron on offense. So then it's great. It's like kind of a pickup format. You have a team of 4 or 5, depending on which team you end up on, and you just play round robin 6 games. So we rolled to a 4-2 record. It was incredible. I was leading the team. It was just, I could pretend I was RJ Barrett for like 2 hours. And it was amazing. And then this week, I get my friend Mohan to go. I'm just telling him, man, we're going to dominate. He's like this really good point guard, like lights out shooter, really good passer, tight handle. I've been advocating, if the Knicks go through another point guard drought, I think they might sign him. But this week, there's another 6'4" dude who's just bigger and stronger than me, and they put him on a team with Ginger Russell Westbrook, who, this kid is just a beast, man. He's like strong, quick, fast, could shoot, and we got rolled by them. We, after a 2-0 start, we lost 2 other games. We finished strong, though. We were playing probably the worst team, who we just sort of like gifted a victory in our first game, and We just rolled them. Like, this guy, like, I came out like full court pressing, and the guy I was guarding was like, really, you're gonna full court press in a Jewish pickup league game? And I was just like, yep, we're on a 3-game losing streak. Gotta turn it around. So we rolled over them. Won a game after the class ended. So ended on a good note. A little disappointed with it overall. We're gonna come back. We're gonna have some new ways of defending off-ball screens for my squad. We're thinking of incorporating more pick and pop. The real issue is there's no three-point line in this league, which is really far and away the best thing I do on a basketball court. And when the other team is just physically bigger than you, like I think everyone else on my team was under 5'5", it's very hard to score when the floor is that cramped. And there's no reason for them to guard you 22 feet out. But if anyone has any suggestions or if anyone wants to get in on this league, or I was talking about this last year, but I would love to set up a scenario where me and Alex could play pickup with people who listen to the podcast. So anyone who wants to make that happen, even if it's not until the spring, when the weather turns around, we could all meet up at a park or something. I think that would be really cool and a whole lot of fun. All right, with that, I will wrap up this edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Alex will be back with me later this week. Until then, be good, peace out, and go home.